WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
The chapter names in Jeanette Winterson's first novel, Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit, are the same as those in the Old Testament. The novel is Winterson's autobiographical account of her severe upbringing in a Pentecostal family in the north of England, where the walls were decorated with mission maps, and everyone spoke of right and wrong with Old Testament certainty. The novel won England's Whitbread Prize for the best first novel. Winterson's new novel, The Passion, is set in France, Russia, and Venice during the Napoleonic Wars. Jeanette Winterson left the church after she fell in love with a woman. I asked her to describe her family and its commitment to religion.
It's perhaps hard to imagine, but this was a family that was entirely centered around God. We went to church every night for one reason or another, either the prayer meeting or the sisterhood meeting, or the regular church service. And at home, people were always in and out, trying to find out what the missionaries were doing in foreign parts. And that was my mother's job. She was the missionary secretary. And she was always worried that most of them were being killed or eaten.
How did you start to preach?
I just got up there on a box. The boxes got smaller as I got bigger. And I did it. It never seemed a strange thing to do because my parents had adopted me because they wanted me to be a missionary. And in the meantime, they wanted me to preach the word. So I knew that that was my job. And because I had the Bible read to me every day and because I've got a good memory, I guess I just knew how to do it.
What kind of sermons would you preach?
Oh, real hellfire and damnation ones. There's no messing about with the fundamentalist, is there? You go straight to hell if you're not saved by Jesus.
Was it considered unusual for a girl to be a preacher?
No, it wasn't. But that was because my mother, being a very strong woman, had decided that I was marked out as special and that when she'd gone to the orphanage to find herself a baby, God had said, "This is the one, take her home." So it didn't really matter what gender I was at that stage. It was simply that I was doing the Lord's will. Later on, of course, it mattered enormously what gender I was.
Well, in your novel, the girl falls in love with a woman when she becomes of age, and I guess that happened to you too.
Yes, it did. I think if you're brought up to believe that you are guided by God, you have tremendous confidence. How else could it be? All the rest of the poor suckers having a terrible time and you're chosen. So when I fell in love with another woman, it didn't occur to me that there was anything odd about it. I simply did it.
When it became clear to the people around you that you were having a relationship with this other woman, did they try to exorcise what they perceived as your demons?
Yes, it was particularly terrible. One day, we were simply brought up before the church and told, that we were in terrible sin and that we'd have to split up, not see each other. And, of course, I raged against this, so I had to be exorcised because they were convinced that I was possessed by demons. So this meant being locked up for 3 days without food and without a light so that I could get round to repenting.
And did you repent?
Of course. After 3 days in those conditions, you'll say anything.
So what did you have to say when you repented?
I just allowed them to pray over me, and I said that I realised that what I'd done was wrong, though I hadn't realised at the time, and that I wouldn't do it again. But of course, being intelligent, I began then to realise that there was something seriously wrong with this religion, and desperately uncompromising about it. And that started the whole thing falling away, because I thought, well, either I can go on living like this or I just have to leave this house and try and work out what's really going on. So I left.
One of the things that really interested me in Oranges Are Not the Only Fruit, your earlier novel, your semi-autobiographical novel, was that the mother and the mother's women friends in the novel really hate sex. And there's a scene where the mother hears a couple fornicating next door, so
yes.
She sits down at the piano and starts playing her favorite hymn,
yes.
Yield Not to Temptation.
That's right.
and even, the girl in the book gets the feeling that she was adopted because her mother didn't want to have sex in order to procreate. Do you think that the women's fear of sex and of heterosexual sex had something to do with their fear of lesbianism?
I think they just feared passion, feared feeling, full stop. It didn't matter whether it was heterosexual or not. I think my mother saw herself as a vessel purified by God, and she would have preferred if everybody else saw themselves that way. You know, it's a theme that's run through religion, the Christian religion anyway, almost since it started. You know, Christianity doesn't like pleasure, it's frightened of pleasure in any shape or form. And sexual pleasure is particularly anarchic, because it makes you look at yourself in a different way, it opens you up. A lot of people are afraid of sex for that reason.
How did you start writing?
Well, I didn't have any money at all. You know, I'd left Oxford and I didn't know what I was going to do, and I couldn't really get a job. So I started to tell a woman in a publishing company some stories about my rather bizarre life. She said, OK, if you can write it the way you tell it, I'll buy it. And this was a great challenge to me. So I rushed off and wrote the first draft, and she took it. It really started from there, and it's been strange for me because I feel like somebody who was contracted to an arranged marriage and found themselves in love. You know, this is what I can do, and it's my sanity and my joy, so I'm really fortunate that I found it.
Do you think that your storytelling has been influenced at all by your early reading of the Bible or of your preaching when you were young?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I do have a very spare economic style, and I've learned that from the Bible, and if you think of the way the Bible's written, always in a very few words, in a few verses, you get the whole story. You know who the people are, you know where the place is, and something miraculous has happened. The Bible doesn't waste any time. It gets to the point and it uses words very precisely.
Let's talk about your new novel. Your new novel is called The Passion, and it's set in the early 1800s at the time of the Napoleonic Wars.
Yes.
I'd like for you to read the very opening of the novel.
It was Napoleon who had such a passion for chicken that he kept his chefs working around the clock. What a kitchen that was, with birds in every state of undress, some still cold and slung over hooks, some turning slowly on the spit, but most in wasted piles because the emperor was busy. Odd to be so governed by an appetite. It was my first commission. I started as a neck wringer, and before long I was the one who carried the platter through inches of mud to his tent. He liked me because I am short. I flatter myself. He did not dislike me. He liked no one except Josephine, and he liked her the way he liked chicken.
Why did you want to set your novel at the turn of the 1800s?
There were two reasons. One was that I got fascinated by the idea of Napoleon, because I heard on the radio how he went through his Egyptian campaign eating nothing but chicken, which he wrapped in brown paper. And I thought about this man and what it was that had excited a whole country to lose their lives and their livelihood for him for years and years. How had he done it? You know, what was his charisma? So I wanted to know about him. But I've always believed that setting things in the past allows you to enter into almost a fairy tale world where the constraints of the present are missing. It's like swimming, you know, your usual sense of gravity is gone. You go somewhere different and you can learn lessons that would not be possible if you were there in your own home, in your own front room, reading about people who were contemporary with you.
And you do take advantage of that.
Yes, very much so. I do think that The Passion sets up a magical interlude where people have all kinds of choices and where they can read the story in all kinds of different ways because it's quite multi-layered. So you can read it simply as a story, or you can go much deeper into it because really it's about obsession.
I want to quote a line from your book. In between fear and sex, passion is.
Mm-hmm.
Explain.
There's not really much to explain because it is summed up by that line. I think that passion is terrifying because you're in danger of losing yourself. And most of us really don't want to do that. We want to stay in control. And very often, the only thing that pushes us on, that allows us to make that leap and to say, OK, I'll go somewhere I've never been before with this person, is sexual desire. That's what acts as the catalyst. That's what makes us dare to do it. And that's why I said earlier that sex is so frightening, because if you do follow your heart's desire, you could end up anywhere.
One last thing. This is a really broad question, but what's the most interesting thing that you learned in the research that you did for your new book?
The most interesting thing?
Yeah.
I suppose what I always discover when I look at the lessons of history, which is that people don't change and they go on making the same mistakes very much in the same sort of way. And all we can do is look at that. And and laugh a little and forgive ourselves.
Well, Jeanette Winterson, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jeanette Winterson's new novel, The Passion, is published by Atlantic Monthly Press. This is Fresh Air.